In this part of Focus, we will be talking about the future of public broadcasting and federal funding for public broadcasting. It's something that lately we've gotten a lot of questions about, and we wanted to give you the most up-to-date information that we have and tell you about how we are thinking about this right at the moment. And so we asked our general manager, Don Mullally, if he would come in and would spend an hour with us and talk about where things stand right at the moment and give you an opportunity to ask questions as well. And he was going to have to say, yes, he would do that. So this morning we will talk a little bit about what we know about the possibility of a cut for funding in public broadcasting and how we think that we would deal with those cuts if indeed they came. And also perhaps we can suggest to you some things that you might do if you would like to see the support for public broadcasting continue. If you have questions, comments, your input is very welcome here this morning. All you need to do to be a part of the conversation is to call us here in Champaign-Urbana, the number 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line that's good anywhere you can hear us. Anywhere around Illinois or Indiana or any place else, you can use the toll-free line, and that is 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Those are the numbers. Well, Don, thanks very much for being here.
Good morning, David. Good to be here.
I suppose that, you know, the question that I would ask you to start, the question that people have asked me and someone called in just the other day, Alex and I were doing an impromptu open line and someone called in and they said, essentially the man said, just how worried are you? Well, let me ask you, you're the general manager, just how worried are you?
Very.
You took a long time to reach for that word.
You see, this is a very complicated problem. I mean, you can view this as the beginning of the end of public broadcasting as we know it and the beginning of a very painful death of the WILO stations. Or you can view it as an opportunity to tell the story in such a way that people react appropriately and we can view this then as an opportunity to save the system.
Hmm. Is there any, can we say today what we think is going to happen? Or are we still in a position of saying, well, we're really not sure what's going to happen? And for whether funding, whether there would be a complete funding and whether that would happen very suddenly, whether there might be a substantial reduction and that would happen suddenly, whether there would be a substantial reduction and maybe that would happen over a period of a few years. Do we have any idea?
Yes. I'm prepared to make some predictions. I'm prepared to be wrong, but I'm prepared to make some predictions. Let me explain why this discussion has suddenly emerged. That is, this is not something that was on the table last year or the year before that. I think it begins with something that Newt Gingrich said, and I'm going to quote him verbatim. He said, "One of the things we're going to do this year, I hope, is to zero out the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which has been eating taxpayers' money." That sort of was the beginning of the discussion. A few other people in politics, Senator Larry Pressler for one, has said, what we want is to have the system privatized. And that was the beginning of the discussion. And it has escalated from there. Now, what will likely happen is that people in Congress will view this as an opportunity to cut the funding for public broadcasting, and in a minute I'll explain how that system works. By doing that and by telling us to privatize, they are saying that the mission of public broadcasting has changed. We do not want you to do what you've been doing for the reasons you've been doing it for the last 25 years. We want you to do something else and go figure out how to support it. So I think they will view this as just one element in a group of tax cut or spending cut proposals. And my guess is there will be two unique characters about this characteristics about this effort. Number one, it will be bundled in with a lot of other things. And politicians are not dumb. They realize that if it were possible for people to discuss each of the individual items in a very large package, they'd have a hard time because there are supporters of public broadcasting, lots of them, and if they had a chance to argue the issue, they might indeed win. Mm-hmm. And that's true of every issue. So ultimately, it would be very difficult to cut much. Secondly, we will probably see what we'll call enforced party discipline on this issue. Now, I've talked with a lot of politicians about this, and as one of them put it succinctly, we are in an era of a strong speaker, and referring, of course, to Newt Gingrich, and he probably will say, okay, this is how our position will fall out on this particular issue. We'll vote that way, and he will expect members of the party to vote in that way. Now, the Democrats for the last 20 or 30 years could hardly ever muster party discipline on anything. I mean, they couldn't get, eight people to agree on any one position. But I think in this case, Mr. Gingrich has the power to enforce party discipline. So I'm expecting that we're going to have a very interesting time.
Hmm. If indeed they would zero out the budget for CPB, when would that cut in effect come to us?
That is a very interesting question. I thought I knew the answer to that last year. Let me explain how this Corporation for Public Broadcasting thing works. It has long been recognized that the federal government has a role in public broadcasting. That is, that it is a sufficiently important social amenity, a way of educating the electorate, a way of educating children, a way of providing cultural amenities such as concerts and classical music and things that don't exist in the marketplace, that the federal government should have some role in funding that. They were worried that there would be an attempt at political influence on the content of public broadcasting. And indeed, there was. In the Nixon administration, they did not like the coverage that the Nixon administration was getting. And so Mr. Nixon withheld the funding for public broadcasting, and it created a great crisis. The Congress created a mechanism to deal with that. They created the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This was something created by Congress. It's a private corporation. And they also created something called advanced funding, whereby they decided how much money the Corporation for Public Broadcasting would get 2 years in advance so that public broadcasting would be judged overall rather than on one politically controversial program or another. Now, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting gets some money from Congress and passes that money through to local stations like WILL, AM, FM, and TV on a formula basis. The more money we raise from our own listeners and viewers, the more money we get from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Now, to return to your question, if they said, let's zero it out, theoretically, they're talking about zeroing it out 2 years down the road because of that advanced funding process. But just in this last year, a controversial program was broadcast by a station on the West Coast, and this sufficiently enraged a couple of congressmen that they breached that 2-year advanced funding wall, and it was decided that now is the time. So they cut the funding this year for this year's broadcasting. So I guess my answer is it could be immediate. It could be 2 years down the road. Nobody knows.
Our guest this morning is our general manager, Don Mullally. We're talking about the future of public broadcasting and federal funding for public broadcasting. If you have questions, comments, we welcome those. We have two people here ready to go. Others are welcome into the conversation. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. But, by the way, just one real quick thing before we go to calls. We wanted to mention that if people would like to have a fact sheet on public broadcast finance, that we would be happy to send that to them. And when they call in this morning, If they would simply give their name and address to Jason Croft, our director, he will take those down and would be happy to send them out. And people wouldn't – also, we shouldn't say that they must then also comment on the program. If all they want is to get the fact sheet, you can give us your name and address. That's fine. But either way, we'd be happy to have your input on the program. Our first caller here is N.B. Ment. This is line number 4. Hello. Well,
yeah, hi. Yeah, I want to bring something up that might not be widely known, and that's it. Many PBS stations are getting really criticized by independent video and television production companies because they are doing outside production for hire, you know, the PBS stations and cities. Now, my argument with them, in fact, it's been out in some fairly widespread and influential production-related magazines. It was a editorial first printed in Videography magazine, and then it was reprinted recently, I think, in Television Broadcast. And anyway, my argument with them is they need to lobby for more funding of public broadcasting, because that would take the pressure off the local stations financially, and they wouldn't feel the need to market their services outside, for one thing. And then number two, I'm sure the people at your station would much rather work on their own projects and work on commercials or corporate projects or something. And that it seems to me that broadcasting and video production could have some influence on the Hill, so maybe PBS should be confronting this issue with these people, you know, writing, you know, editorials, letters to the editors of these magazines, and, you know, talking to the heads of, like, the International Television Association.
You know, I think your point is a very good one. We don't do a lot of that outside production here at the WILL stations, but it in some major cities, it's a very important issue. Let me tell you why stations do that. The first reason is that Congress has said privatize. We want you to make it out in the marketplace. Get off the federal dole. And that's what Larry Pressler is saying right now. So, of course, they're looking for all kinds of sources of revenue to support themselves. Secondly, I think there's a logical reason for them to do this. To the degree that you have to have a critical mass of equipment and people and so on to make any kind of broadcasting system work, and it is underutilized, you are, of course, very inefficient. And to the degree that a private videographer or producer or whatever functions in the marketplace and uses his or her equipment well, then that person should get rich. That person should be efficient. That person should get some individual reward for that effort. When a public broadcasting station uses its excess capacity efficiently, it doesn't get rich. It reinvests that money for the general benefit of the public. And so the taxpayers get rich, if you will. Their investment is wisely used. I absolutely agree with you that individual producers and commercial broadcasters ought to be pushing Congress for better support of public broadcasting, because what do you suppose is going to happen if we are out there in the marketplace competing with all the other broadcasters? I mean, it would be a disaster.
Yeah, and I also have a comment for commercial broadcasters that are sort of along these lines, and also some corporate in-house production facilities. For example, there's one membership association having to do with agriculture that is huge, and they buy all the equipment and hire the people full time. Well, when things get slow with them, they go out and steal independent producers' work, and they're subsidized by their membership. And beyond that, a lot of independent producers around here would love to work more in local commercials. But you can't compete because the TV stations, you know, not all, you know, they already have, you know, huge amounts of equipment and personnel on their staff, number one. And number two, they make their money off selling the commercial time, and that subsidizes their production, which ends I end up paying for when I buy products, and then they can easily undercut independent producers by at least 50% and freeze independent producers out of the market. So, you know, some of this is kind of, you know, the pot calling the kettle black. And I'll go ahead and hang up. Yeah,
okay. Well, thanks for your comment. Let's go on here. We do have somebody else. This is an Urbana caller waiting. This is line number one. Hello.
Hello. From the comments I've heard so far from both the host and the guest there, I take that you both feel that it would be very bad if this proposed legislation was actually passed.
Yes, I do, and let me tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Let me look at it, first of all, just from the local perspective. If CPB funding were zeroed out, that would take $1 million a year out of the budgets of our AM-FM TV operation. That would take $1 million a year out of this community. Now, can you imagine what will happen to the quality of our service if you deduct about 20% or 25% of our total revenue stream? I can assure you that everything is on the table at that point. I'm talking about concert programs. I'm talking about agriculture programs. I'm talking about talk programs. I'm talking about everything that we do is up for grabs at that point. And we have to the reason I feel so strongly about it is because it would severely damage the quality of programming that we could offer to this community.
Okay. Well, one of the many reasons I've heard people give for why they feel the government should get out of the broadcasting business is that, and again, this is just one of many reasons, there are many type of government broadcasting out there. However, one of the main reasons I hear a lot of people say is that they don't like the government paying for people to, over the airwaves, lobby for or against legislation, which is exactly what you just said you are doing.
I will agree with you to some degree. At the moment, I think what we should be doing is telling people what the consequences of this legislation would be and let them decide for themselves what they want to do. Now, if you are in favor of cutting the funding for public broadcasting, I urge you immediately to change to another station, but write a letter to Congress and tell them so. I think everybody ought to have a chance. And I think one of our jobs as public broadcasters is to explain to people the consequences of every piece of legislation and to have advocates or what's the opposite of an advocate, Dave? People from all different levels of opinion on every subject talk about their legislation on the air so everybody will understand it.
Okay. When do you plan on having people and voting a show with both the host and the guest both greatly supporting this kind of legislation on your station?
Hey, I've got you on right now.
No, I mean the host and guest.
Well,
you don't plan to, do you?
It seems to me that just last week,
this is government propaganda. This is why you should be shut down.
It seems to me just last week we had a gentleman from Washington who was definitely against the funding of public broadcasting and said so on the air. And he's the guy who writes that political report.
Yeah.
But
Horowitz was on the Afternoon Magazine.
To it.
And pardon me?
That's not having a program dedicated to it like you're doing today.
Oh, we will. We will.
I have no problems with having somebody on the air speaking against public broadcasting. I find it a little amusing that they would want to use public broadcasting as a means of discussing it, but I have no problem with that.
They're paying for it.
Pardon?
Those of us who oppose it are paying for you to sit there on the air and support it. If I'm paying for you to support it, of course I'm going to listen and call in. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that you say that I shouldn't be listening to your station and hence shouldn't be involved in this conversation because I don't want to pay for it is ludicrous. I am paying for it.
Right, and I guess I welcome you to the discussion and to
well,
the station. Just in the same way that I welcome you to use the public library, whether you agree with all the books that are there or not.
Right. Then well, why did you propose I should get off the air?
Well, I assumed that you were so much against public broadcasting that you'd prefer not to be involved in it.
I just don't like it when you go on and deliberately try to change the course of legislation. Because you can, even if you really try and do your best to present a balanced view, a government employee's view of a balanced view, which you guys get your paychecks from the state, I believe, U of I, a government employee's view of what is balanced, I don't believe should be the criteria. because it will be inherently unbalanced.
Mm-hmm. And that I guess, is one of the great benefits of having a talk program where everyone can participate, no matter what their viewpoint.
That's true. That's true.
Okay. Well,
I've said my piece.
Thank you very much. We have some other calls here. Let me ask you a question that sort of arises out of all of this. There are a lot of people who have made the argument that public radio and TV ought to be self-supporting. That is, we ought to say to, as we do several times a year, we ought to say to the people who watch and listen, we want you to support the service. If you like it, you should help pay the cost of running it. And there are some people who say, in fact, that's right. That's the way it ought to go, that the people who listen and watch, they ought to pay the cost, and government shouldn't be involved. We shouldn't be taking the money out of people's pockets to support a service that they don't want. So what it comes down to, the question I want to ask is this. Supposing that CPB was zeroed out, that $1 million goes out of our budget, can we hope to make up that $1 million from listeners and viewers?
Absolutely. We can make it in the market. I can assure you of that. Now, let me tell you how you do that. The programming that we offer now is thoughtful programming. It deals with significant issues. It deals with culture, the arts, and so on. These are not things which sell well in society. You realize that. This is not broadcasting for everyone. This is broadcasting for people who really want to think about things and who have perhaps a serious turn of mind, but who perhaps like classical music, or who have kids who want to have a Sesame Street program without commercials on it. Okay. If you say, go make it in the marketplace, two things happen. One, we immediately switch to programming which will sell in the marketplace, that is, which will have an audience that is sufficiently large to generate the kind of money that's necessary to support it. Now, if we take the government partnership out of this, we've got to generate at least 20% more money, maybe 25% more money, and I suspect that what happens then is you deal with fewer serious issues, you get more glib talk show hosts, you get people who will inflame and enrage and proselytize and whatever is necessary to get the audience to pay, and to get a larger audience in the first place. Now, when we say we're going to deal with the serious, we immediately are saying we're going to accept an audience that is smaller than commercial radio stations. Now, when Senator Larry Pressler says make it in the marketplace, they're saying compete with commercial broadcasters. We know how to do that. There's no problem with that. That means get the largest possible audience, and while you're at it, go out and get some advertisers to support it. I suppose most parents who have their kids watching Sesame Street would not like it when we put the commercials in Sesame Street for toys and games and so on. Or maybe the people who are listening to our radio station would not like to have our programs interrupted by commercials. I'm not talking about mentions of underwriters' names. I'm talking about hard sell stuff that will appeal and will cause people to buy or whatever. I don't want to go that way. I want to have broadcasting that can do things which are not so popular, which can do things which are significant, and which can appeal to thinking people.
Could you imagine the Congress saying to public TV and radio stations, if you want to sell commercial time, go right ahead?
I certainly can. I mean, that's what they are telling us now. What they are saying is, go make it in the marketplace. And that means compete. That means sell commercials. I think this is a very dangerous road to go down. And I think what they are really saying is, your mission is no longer to do what is in the best interest of the audience. Your mission is to do what will sell.
This morning we're talking with our general manager. His name is Don Mullally, and we're talking about the future of public broadcasting and government support for public broadcasting stations like this one and WILL-FM and WILL-TV. If you have questions or comments, you can call us 333-WILL, toll free 800-222-WILL. Our next caller is in Champaign. This is line number 2. Hello.
Good morning. This is David. first of all, I'd like to say as good as I think this would be for public radio and television, I think since I'm in a human service profession and we're going through a similar thing of having to become service more oriented towards the service payer than the service recipient, to maybe think about not replicating what you find on commercial TV and radio. That I think there are other ways to continue on your current path of raising revenues without prostituting yourself by saying, hey, the only way we can be on the air is by promoting products we don't believe in. And I think you can avoid that when I hear you talking about commercials on Sesame Street. So, I think you're very successful at providing a service that people want, and so I think you can succeed. The second thing I'd like to do, and I'm sure I'm the first in a long line of people wanting to rebut a previous caller, we all pay for services we don't want all the time. On the county level, I am paying for all the township roads. There are probably 200 or 300 in Champaign County. I don't use them. On the state level, I'm paying for an Air Force and a Navy I don't want. And on the national level, I'm very much paying for an Army I don't want. And this is just part of life, that in a democracy, we pay for services we don't want. And then my third point is I'm constantly annoyed by the conservative viewpoint that I hear on NPR. And I'd like to say I think it is really well-balanced programming, despite what someone else's programming said, because I am constantly annoyed. I am a liberal, and I'm constantly hearing things that really bother me and I wish weren't on the air, but I think you do a real good job, and that's me on my soapbox, and keep it up, please.
Okay, I appreciate the comments. You want to respond to any of that?
Well, yes. First of all, thank you. I want to tell you that we are thinking about alternatives. This whole business of federal support has been a very rocky road. But at the moment, nobody has been able to figure out how to do it in a way that makes sense and that is consistent and that supplies the amount of money that's necessary and so on, or that is politically palatable. Let me tell you how much you're paying for the services that we generate. Public television costs American citizens 80 cents per year per citizen. Public radio costs them about another 19 cents, something like that. Compared to other countries, that is an amazingly small amount of money. In Japan, it's over $9 a year per citizen goes into their public broadcasting system. Every industrialized country in the world has a good public broadcasting system that is supported through different mechanisms, but basically it is government support. Now, I guess I don't apologize for that 80 cents. I think it's a great buy. And if you're interested in continuing to pay your 80 cents for that service, for our services, I guess this is the time to ask for the fact sheet, and we'll tell you who to write to so that you can decide. If you think it's a lousy buy, if you think you shouldn't be spending 80 cents, ask us for the fact sheet, and we'll tell you who to write to.
All right. Okay. Line 3 is next. This is Urbana. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. I guess I'd like to take issue with that fellow, the call before last, too. He objects very strongly to your lobbying do your lobbying because you're using his funds to present your case. I would like to suggest that there's more than one side to lobbying, that there is the lobbying that we all object to, where a lobbyist attempts to buy influence. But there's also the very legitimate function of lobbying, where you present the best case for your particular constituency, in your case, public radio, and you make a public argument in support of that position. And to me, that is a very legitimate. In fact, I think in your case, it is very much your duty to make that case, which I think you've been attempting to do, and I think successfully. And I wish to simply say that I feel that we should all support you in this and not attack you for doing what is actually your obligation.
You know, I think you've made a very good point, and I need to respond to it. You know, these are not our stations. These are your stations. They're licensed to the University of Illinois, but they are really owned by the people of the state of Illinois and by the people who support us with their own financial contributions and all of the taxpayers. And so I think I would be remiss if I didn't explain to people what would be the consequences of moving down a particular road. I see it as a very unpleasant and socially unfeasible kind of road to go down. But I thank you for your support.
May I say just one other thing?
Sure.
These people are not conservatives. They're nihilists. They wish to destroy all vestiges of government. And I think, although some of them are very bright people, I think that it is an ideology which spells disaster, because the central feature of civilization is man's ability to form governments and to govern themselves through these collective units. And I think we are incapable of destroying government as they would like to do. But even if we could, I think it would be disastrous. The other point is, you raised that we own the airwaves and that it is our public broadcasting. I would also point out that we own the airwaves as well for private broadcasters, and they are, in a sense, being subsidized by all of us because they underpay us for those airwaves.
Are you advocating, for example, that commercial broadcasters should pay some sort of tax, which then would be funneled into supporting public broadcasting?
I think that would be an excellent idea. At least I think they should be taxed because they are enormously profitable, and perhaps simply put the money into the general fund, although it certainly would be equitable to put some of that aside for public broadcasting. I'm terribly disappointed in private broadcasting. Even their news coverage has reached the point where it is a National Enquirer style. The only news that I see, other than magazines and newspapers, that is legitimately can claim to be news is on public broadcasting, radio and television. I think I've probably said enough. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate your support. Let me make one more comment about the function of government and the function of public broadcasting. One of the functions of government is to preserve the best of society's past and to try and help society find its way to a productive and good future. I'd like to argue that that's also one of the roles of public broadcasting, to preserve the best of our society's past and present it to a new generation. That's why we do classical music on our FM station. That's why we talk about issues on our AM station, because it's a way of helping society figure out where it's been and where it's going. And that's really one of the reasons for this discussion, too.
Okay. Well, let's go on here. This is, let's see, next we'll go to Peoria. This is line number 4.
Good
Hello.
Morning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the question is, too, what kind of society do we want to live in? Do we want to live in a nation where the population says, okay, I support 90 cents a year to go for public broadcasting and another 19 cents for radio? I mean, the fellow that called earlier about it's, you know, I'm paying for it and all of that is a total lack of any sort of sense of community or civic connection. It's just, you know, very personal, me, me, me. And I just keep seeing all of these arguments against this sort of minuscule public support for the arts or information as being demagoguery and clouding the issues of perhaps legitimate cuts in the budget. I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Well, I think your point is an interesting one. I'd like to respond. I guess I'd like to support the view of those people who are very much disturbed by public broadcasting. You know, in many of the towns of Illinois, we are a very controversial kind of broadcasting. We talk about things that are not general topics of conversation in many communities. We raise issues that are very troublesome. We talk about things that people maybe never have even thought about before. And I'm sure that's very disturbing to them. And I'm very glad that we do it, because I think that one of our roles is to be just slightly disturbing, that is to cause people to think about everything, to think about why do I believe that, and come to their own conclusions. We dare to consider all things, and all things considered is important to us all. That, by the way, is what universities are about, seeing that all things are considered. And that's why this is a very appropriate activity of a university to sponsor a public broadcasting station.
We have this morning I usually say we have 10 minutes left, and because this is a market holiday and the markets are closed today, we will have a little bit more time than that. So really we have more like about 15 minutes left, and we will take as many calls as we can. Let me reintroduce our guest. We're talking this morning with our general manager, Don Mullally. We're talking about the future of public broadcast funding. And I want to mention again, the reason that we're doing this program is that we have had questions and calls and a lot of concern from people wanting to know what was happening with funding for public broadcasting. And so what we wanted to do with this program was to tell you what we know right now and give you the chance to ask questions and tell us what you think, whether you think that the funding should continue or you think that the funding should be cut. We're interested in what you have to say. We have several people lined up here ready to go, and so we will get right back to it. We have an Urbana caller. This is line number one. Hello.
Hi there. Mm-hmm. I'd like to say that, you know, public radio and television has spoiled commercial TV for me. I remember a number of elections ago watching a soundbite of a politician on a commercial TV and then, say, turning to the McNeil-Lehrer report and seeing that soundbite actually was taken incredibly out of context and, in fact, misrepresented what the politician said. And I'd say that went for conservative as well as liberal politicians. I was appalled, absolutely appalled. Also, that the long interviews on issues that you get on WILL are simply unavailable anywhere else, and that that's extremely important to listen to that. And finally, I'd just like to say about that fellow who called and doesn't want to pay for public radio, I'd like to make a public offer. If he would call back and leave his name and address, I'd send him the 80 cents every year so he can stop his whining. Thank you.
You know, that's a very generous offer, isn't it? A word, though, about this business of what to do. You see, the push has come to shove, so to speak. This is going to wind up as part of some sort of large package of funding cuts, I would guess, in Washington. And if you agree that public broadcasting funding should be continued, this is your chance to do something about it. And I guess this is the time for you to write a letter to Washington. If you'd like a fact sheet, we'll be glad to send you one. Which gives you some numbers like that 80-cent number and tells you how many people use public broadcasting. Incidentally, about 97 million Americans tune in to public television each week, and about another 19 million Americans tune into public radio each week. So this isn't just something that is for the idle rich and the eggheads of our society by a long shot. So you should ask Jason for a copy of the fact sheet, which will have on it the addresses of people you should write to. And I make that same offer to people who think public broadcasting funding ought to be cut. Ask for the fact sheet and the addresses and do your thing.
Okay. We have a number of other callers here. Let's go on to someone else. This is Bloomington, Indiana, line number two. Hello.
Yes. Hello. I want to second all the kudos you're getting about the quality of public television and radio and the contribution they make to the public national life. In my own life, I must say that the library and your station and C-SPAN are the best parts of American culture that I use, frankly. I'm wondering if one of the things you could do is try to get a check-off system on people's income taxes, that because if you can earn some money that way, it would be money that would be totally insulated from the whims of one administration or another, and one Congress or another. It would be remove it from the political realm if you actually earn it on a dollar a year check off system or something like that. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
That's kind of an interesting suggestion. I don't know whether it would produce enough money, and I think everybody's too terrified to find out because typically the ones that they're using now are a dollar checkoff or something like that. And I don't know whether that would produce enough revenue to support the system. But I think it's an interesting idea, and maybe that plus some other changes would be good. But I don't want to do anything too quickly. That is, I want to be able to predict the results before we go off and do it. And that's what troubles me so much. And it's good to get a call from Indiana because many people forget that we cover such an enormous service area.
Yeah. Again, this is, line number three. This is also Indiana. This is Terre Haute. Hello.
Yes, I'd like to make a couple of points this morning. Number one is if the federal government is very much for keeping the American public in, in physical shape by their programs to exercise the body and to get daily exercise and to eat properly, I think your station and public radio stations give exercise of the mind. With the shows that you have on and the topics that you discuss, there's no way that anyone can listen to your station and not exercise their brain power. And I think that we not only need to exercise our bodies, but we also need to use our minds, and I think that's one of the things that public radio and public television do. Second point I'd like to make is that a number of years ago I sold radio advertising, so I know a little bit about the radio business and about advertising schedules and rates and so forth. And one thing that I think we all have to admit is your audience is probably above average as far as the intelligence level of the listening audience. It may be a smaller audience, but I believe the IQ rate would be quite a bit above the average AM/FM radio station in the country. Therefore, the advertisers would have to, be very selective in their promotions and in their advertising, seeing that the people that listen to public radio and public television are just a little bit above average as far as being fooled or being maligned to believe a lot of the advertising that you find on different stations. Also, it seems that the advertising world thinks that most of the major buys that are made by the 18 to 24, 24 or 18 to 34-year-olds. And I have always believed that the people who really spend the money out there in the workaday world are probably the people over 40, between, let's say, 45 and 65. And you have a lot of retirees that are 65 and over that spend a great deal of money. But it seems that the people in control of the rationing of the advertising dollars will never, ever be convinced of that. So I just think that the audience size that you have, but the level of intelligence would make to make it an advertising for you to go into advertising, they would have to sharpen their skills a little bit because they're looking at a different audience.
I think you're absolutely right. There are two points that you raise which I want to clarify just a little bit. You know, they say make it in the marketplace and let the listeners and viewers support the system.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting if you're in a market that has a lot of advertising activity. If you're in a Chicago or New York or Washington or San Francisco or whatever, yes, there's a lot of advertising revenue available and maybe you can get enough of it to support yourself. That is not true, I can assure you, in Champaign Hill. There just isn't enough advertising revenue here to support our station to the level of quality that we would like. Secondly, they say, well, let the audience do it. You know, we have a lot more squirrels and gophers in our coverage area than we do people. It is very, very difficult to get money out of corn stalks. And frankly, if you say let the audience do it, we are broadcasting to a rural audience, which is a very, very thinly populated area. Yes, there are a lot of people somewhere, but I can assure you they're in the big cities. They're not out here in central Illinois.
Well, I'm glad you said that because in checking with some of my old friends in the advertising world, it seems that the country and western stations have grown by, I guess, leaps and bounds throughout the United States, and that more and more stations are going to that type of format. And I just wonder about the audience that they're reaching, whether the advertisers realize the level of audience that listens to I won't say hillbilly music, but country and western. I guess today it's country and western. Whether their advertising dollars are being well spent, I just don't know. But I feel like I support public radio because I don't want the advertising there. I know, you know, what I want to buy, and I have my preferences. And knowing the advertising world like I do, with the experience that I've had with it, I just feel a lot of it is very, very deceptive, and they focus it at people who are not as, skeptical maybe as you get as you grow in intelligence.
Thank you. We like to respect our audience, and I think that, in a sense, you create your audience by giving it that respect and by talking with them intelligently. Thank you.
I appreciate the caller. We have several others. We'll go on here. Just one. One comment. It sounds from what you're saying that if you look at the stations that would have the most difficult time absorbing cuts, if there are big cuts, they are going to be the smaller stations or those that serve areas that are not very densely populated and where there is not a lot of radio available, so that in maybe the stations in the big cities where there's already a lot of media anyway, those stations might be able to do all right, but it's the areas that already are underserved by media that are going to have the difficult time.
I think you're absolutely right.
Okay, let's go on again to Urbana. This is line 4.
Yes, let me say first of all that I'm a solid supporter of public television. Neither my radio dial nor my television ever strays from PBS. However, I do want to take some issue with the proposition that all of your programs should reflect the full diversity of viewpoint in the public and reflect the proportion throughout the country. I think this is so with respect to discussion programs or exposition or an argumentation. I can't think of offhand any topic that should be off limits. But there seems to be a solid, unspoken consensus in society that we keep a veil over, let's say, for example, both the visual and the auditory aspects of elimination, whether urination or defecation. That doesn't seem to raise any issues. But when it comes to sex, anyone that objects to anything like that is considered a prude. I'm thinking in particular of two excellent programs, The Jewel in the Crown and Mary Webb's Precious Bane, wonderful masterpiece theater shows, in the middle of which, for maybe a second, comes a very ugly auditory aspects of sex. And I think it's completely unnecessary. I think there should be a minimum standard of decency maintained in entertainment programs. As I say, if you want to discuss all aspects of sex in an expository or argumentative way, that's fine. But I don't think that they should be inserted in otherwise fine programs.
You know, I think your observation is a good one. I don't agree with everything that we have on the air. There are things that I guess I would prefer we didn't broadcast. But I'm not going to impose my personal views on what we broadcast. I try to get a broad perspective of what we should be doing from the people on our staff and from our audience and so on.
Well, when it comes to plain decency and taste, I don't think it's a case of imposing one's personal views. There should be just, I don't know why this consensus that seems to govern our treatment of defecation, for example, should suddenly not apply when sex is involved. And sex is something that should have some higher connotations.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I would be imposing my views. I think that it's something in which there should be just a quiet agreement that there are some things we just don't do.
I think we should be able to discuss everything. I think your point was really well taken. And what we do, we ought to do in good taste. The problem, of course, is that taste is one of those very slippery issues that there are a lot of opinions about by practically everybody you can imagine has a different set of standards of taste. But I think your point is well taken, and it's great that we can talk about it.
We have about 2 minutes, and I hope that I can – the last caller will forgive me if I go on and try to include one more person. This is Pena, line number two.
Hello. I am a graduate of the U of I in the 50s, and ever since that time, I've through thick and thin, I've listened to WILL, AM, FM, and I feel it's a voice in the wilderness, a light in the night, and I love the discussions. I lost my wife about 2.5 years ago. I'm retired. And I feel without the ads going on that you people are just talking directly to me here in my home, almost as if I could answer you. And if I'm not interested in a discussion, I flip over to FM, WILL-FM, and listen to the wonderful music. I love the classical music, and I just couldn't see the day of doing without it. That's my comment.
Well, thank you. I hope, by the way, you're going to do something to, you know, to let Congress know what you feel.
Yes, I ask for the paper that you're going to send. There's addresses on that.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I thank you for the call. I think we're down here at the point we're just about going to stop. What we can promise you is that there will be more discussion of this issue on this air on these airwaves, both pro and con, and we'll give you some other opportunities to tell us what you think. Also, if people would like to write us or call us to get a copy of this fact sheet, we would be very happy to send it out. I'm not sure that we have the office staff today to respond to a lot of calls, but we'll do our best. And, of course, you could always call tomorrow and call our regular business number, 217-333-0850, and we will send that out to you. Is there any last sort of thing you'd like to leave people with at this point?
Just that it's very delightful to talk to our audience, and that's one of the best things about my job is to be able to talk about these issues with the people who own this station.
Okay. Well, our guest this morning, our general manager, Don Mullally, and again, if you have any kinds of questions about this whole business or questions or comments about anything you hear on these stations, you can call us, you can write us. We're always very happy to respond, and we'll do that the best way that we can.